Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive, America's number one motorcycle insurer. Everything is more exhilarating when you're on your motorcycle. Just like your bike is more protected when you choose Progressive Motorcycle Insurance. They offer coverage for your bike starting as low as $75 per year. And they keep things affordable with discounts like paid in full, multi-policy, and responsible driver. So raise your kickstands and get to quoting at Progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. $75 premium is for state minimum coverage. Not available in D.C. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
What does motion sound like? With Kizikans free shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I was flipping through the channels the other day, but there was nothing good on, I had nothing to play. So I went to my computer and realized that there was so much content before my eyes. But there's nothing but Netflix in my heart and on my screen. But there's always something that did I still haven't seen. But maybe one day we can try.
Yeah, that's right. Nothing but Netflix back again to talk about the rest of Unlocked, the Netflix original reality series, profiling the jail experiment. And back with me is Chappelle. Chappelle, how are you?
Hey, Rob, I am back from lockdown, and I am very happy.
Okay, yes. Pod Daddy is back to talk about everything going on here. The pod boss is ready to go. What a ride we've been on, Chappelle.
Yeah, this was, it feels almost insensitive to call this fun. Because, you know, it's such a heavy topic. It's these people's real lives. I mean, a lot of them are like they're living their lives over the backdrop of just, you know, a lot of trauma, a lot of, you know, mistakes, a lot of horrible mistakes that a lot of people feel like you probably could even take back, you know, some mistakes that people might seem redeemable. But as far as a television show goes, yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed this show. You know,
I mean, gripping is probably a better word.
Yeah, gripping is, yeah, but no, even gripping kind of doesn't give me the energy that I need. You know, like I said, I was into the show. I was very much like waiting for every breath of every character. I wanted to know everything that they were saying, but also I was really getting into the characters, into the storylines.
Yeah.
You get really invested in a way that it's like, it feels like it's heavy, but also if the subject matter wasn't as heavy, it could have been a very, very fun experiment, like outside of, you know, just like, hey, let's just see how people hang out and make community. That's kind of our bread and butter.
Yeah, well, it is really amazing. I mean, some of these characters are like very funny, very,
TV,
you know, really great at like being able to, you would think that they're like very polished in terms of like being people that are on television. But, you know, this is all very real. And but we went through it all. I mean, since we talked about if you missed it at all, we talked about the first two episodes last week on Nothing But Netflix. And now today we're talking about episodes 3 through 8. And I'm just looking back at my notes from where we left off on the end of episode two, when Miller got into it, and the places we've been since then. It's been a journey.
I forgot about Miller. I forgot about Miller. When you said that name. I was about to say, who the hell is Miller? What are you talking about? We voted Miller out so long ago that I haven't even thought about him. He was pre-jury. I'm talking about, or he probably saw a jury or two, but it didn't go well for him. But yeah, I'm talking about since that day, we have been, I mean, we've learned so much. We've met people's families. We've seen different people come in. We've seen people leave. We've seen, you know, house meetings that led to big changes. We've seen structural changes. We've seen a vote out. They've done it all. Mm-hmm. So yeah, this show takes you on a roller coaster ride for sure.
Yeah. So really interesting stuff. Again, full spoilers of Unlocked as we talk about it. Chappelle, now that we've seen the whole thing, what's your reaction to the entire series?
You know, I think the experiment in and of itself was a good experiment. I think that, you know, if the job is to see, can you allow people who you would feel like need to be on lockdown 23 hours out of the day, people you allow, you know, you might consider dangerous to society, can you allow them to have a little bit more freedom, less stressors that are, you know, causing them anxiety, that are influencing the way that they act? If you can decrease those things and increase the freedoms that they have, even while in jail, yeah, things might go a little bit better for them. And I think that was the experiment. And I think that it did prove, in at least in this case, with this particular unit, that it's possible to make those things happen. Now, I know some people will say, oh, well, these people don't need boundaries knocked down. They don't need to have any type of freedoms. But if it's for the betterment of the people, overall, I think that it's something people could at least look to and say, you know, maybe there are things we can make across the prison system that could allow these inmates and these people to kind of redeem themselves in the eyes of society, or even just become better people. I think by making them find community while in jail, it is preparing them for if they ever get out and have to rejoin an uncomfortable situation, like trying to get indoctrinated back into the popular society. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a lot that can be taken from this for sure.
Yeah, I have a lot of questions about the takeaways and even like the premise for the show. I guess I don't know that the answer to this part of the question is that how common is 23-1 in terms of these facilities? Is that like the norm, or are there is this, for whatever reason, this particular facility, this was more of an exception that it was a 23-1 setup?
Yeah, from what I can tell, not all prisons will have you in 23-1 lockdown. It's for very specific inmates, for very specific units or jails, but it's not everybody. So it's not like across the board, every prison is like this. And I think even maybe from unit to unit, it might be different, because from what I can tell, they try to keep the unit, very like the people in the unit and their crimes very similar. You know, mm-hmm. We're not going to put somebody who is, who's not really on the same, you know, level as far as like their offense with some of these people in a normal situation. So I think that, yeah, 23-1 happens a lot of places, but not necessarily everybody's prison experience is a 23-1.
Yeah. And the resolution that they reach at the end of the series, I am like very interested to know, like, did it work? And I would like, I feel like that you could do a whole nother show and profile like the conclusions that they came up with. Like, was that going to work? I just wonder, like, did they need to do such an extreme experiment? Because I feel like that there were so many like good takeaways from what they learned. But like, is there an ability to sort of like do this type of setup, but leave the guards in and sort of like prevent some of the things that went sideways on this? I get it that it probably doesn't make for as good of a television show, but I think that some of the takeaways of like learning and showing that people, if you give them more freedoms and more responsibilities, that there are a lot of benefits that come out of that. But that, do you have to only do that at the expense of like pulling all of the supervision out of the facility?
Yeah. And, you know, there's some supervision, of course, but, you know, for the sake of TV, you know, we are given the idea that these guards are outside the door and, you know, they're going to let the community build itself. They're going to let these prisoners govern themselves under the rules of the jail, but they're just going to manage their own day to day. You know, every like the prisoners will have to, you know, go and make sure the food is set up, all that stuff. But the guards are not going to be looming over them, you know, kind of fussing at them at all turns. They let them, you know, have a little bit of more wiggle room. I think for the sake of this, taking them out, like you said, it's better TV for sure to say, okay, well, the guards won't be there. Like, that's what gets people's attention. Like, oh, you're going to let them out of jail. Okay, fine. You're going to let them, like, kind of roam the unit. Fine. That's not that big of a deal. But if you say, well, I'm taking the guards out, then it makes it say, oh, okay, I'll go watch that, because then, like, you know, chaos might ensue. Maybe we'll get some drama. But it turns out that, yeah, you could have maybe taken out, you know, taking out some of the guards, or even just limited the guards to certain hours of the day, maybe, you know, okay, well, y'all got it. Y'all can do whatever y'all want, but the guard will be back in an hour, you know, or something. So I think that, yeah, this was an extreme case that goes, that makes it look good and flashy for TV, even good for experiment. But I think if you wanted to make little changes that could lead to that, yeah, pull the guards sometime, give them more breaks away from them, or even, you know, maybe tell the guards, you don't have to do all these other, you know, these other things or as many checks of you as you've been doing. But now we've seen kind of how everybody paces themselves, how everybody moves. The guards can come in kind of like on a like a rotating shift or something like that.
Yeah.
I think that there's a way that you can do both things and still accomplish your goal.
Because I feel like there was like two like categories of problems that we had, sort of like the people who were just like not fitting in and getting into fights. And that's the type of stuff that like is really making it like a very like unsafe environment. And then, but then we also had like another category, which was like the mischief, like making the hooch, like creating the wicks, like the tattooing, like the stuff that was not necessarily dangerous, but just is the kind of stuff that it was going to be frowned upon in this setup. And I kind of feel like that the pulling the guards like led to a lot of like the ability to create the mischief. And I still feel like that environment, it's like even the people that were like, you know, like Squirrel, who was like a part of the Randy's group of leaders, was still like very into like, all right, well, like I got this whole hooch operation going on.
Yeah, these people, they don't love rules. And so you know, we've established that. That's why they're here. And so if you take the guards out, you say, yeah, maybe they're not fighting each other. Maybe there's not a lot of shivs being made. I mean, you see one or two throughout this this show for sure. But you do get those other things, like you said, the mischief. But those things are dangerous as well, right? Yeah. Like they cannot be a hooch because one, it's just not safe. You shouldn't be making that in a jail cell. It's chemistry, but it's also kind of nasty. And
but
also,
I do
if
feel
y'all
like
all get drunk,
I can make hooch now. I feel like that this was very instructional.
Easy peasy. I think that every part of this was very instructional. Like, I learned how to make a shiv. I learned how to make hooch. I know how to make a wick. Definitely can make a coffee stick if I needed to. So preparation in case, just in case, you could always be like, man, I watched Unlocked. Thank God. You know, in case it gets real in your life. I'm not saying you're going to jail, but you know, you might be down bad on beverages one day. You might need to do a little something in the bathroom sink.
Yeah, if you have the supplies. All right. Well,
yeah, you can.
Again, this was just so much happened. And so I guess should we just do you want to talk through the characters? Do you want to talk through what happened?
I really like the big picture. Right. So as we talked about last time, they had 6 weeks to figure this all out, and that there were going to be moments where, you know, their situation evolved into something else. So it starts off, we have these inmates, we leave them in there, we say, do your thing. And immediately Randy springs into action and says, all right, I'm going to create a task force. I'm going to, you know, this is going to be the people who are in charge. They're going to be maintaining the rules that we already follow here in jail, except you can come outside and play, you know, everybody can hang out. There's not any real restrictions on that, but we still want to keep the same jail rules. Well, from that, we see that, you know, they pick and choose which jail rules they want to follow. You know, they say that, but then when you're leading the prisoners to lead themselves, then there's some people who might take their power and might let it go to their head. They might make their own rules. They put themselves above everybody else. And so they deal with those things. But when they rise to those occasions, the sheriff then brings in different little extra freedoms that also test these people's ability to manage themselves. So from there we see, okay, well, you're doing well, let's make the phones free. From the phones we see, okay, well, we're doing the phones, well, maybe we can give you more visitation. And to the point where eventually we see them bringing in new people into the unit to see how they react to those people. And they even have to navigate that. There is a vote at some point where they have to vote off the bad apple out of the group because they don't want anybody messing this up. And then the sheriff has to leave it up to them to decide, okay, now what did you learn and what can we do differently to keep you from having to go back to 23-1 before the series is ultimately over? So I think that it's been a journey.
Yeah.
But I think big picture, just seeing how a lot of these issues happen organically and then how just changing one thing in the routine can completely throw off the hierarchy if somebody's not willing to stand it, like stand into that leadership role. It was very entertaining.
Yeah. And we really went on this ride where, okay, they got these freedoms and then we saw the people that took advantage of the situation and we saw it got really wild at one point with just everything just being pretty out of control to the point where you felt like, okay, well, at some point it's going to get shut back down. And across that is also sort of the rise and fall of Randy as the leader, you know, in terms of our reality TV. Did Randy have HOH-itis? Was there a house revolt against him? Seemingly, Randy did not handle it well, completely said, hey, you can't fire me, I quit. He pulled back, and then in that vacuum of leadership, things really got wild to the point where it got all shut down. Everybody had to go back to solitary, or basically everybody had to go back to being locked down 23-1. And then kind of out of that, the story we get is that there's like, okay, they learned a lesson after that. And that gets us to where we ultimately, there is like a new order that ends up being created out of this around a mentorship that's going to happen in the facility from here on out, led by, you know, we saw Crooks and Willie and Randy and a lot of the elder statesmen of the group say that they're going to take this on. Although a lot of them weren't there by the end.
No. These people, remember, a lot of these people are here transitioning into what their real prison will be. You know, there's like, oh yeah, they're waiting sentencing sometimes in this place. So it's not a revolving door per se, but there are a lot of them that are not going to be there by the end of that 6 weeks period.
Yeah.
Even I had read somewhere online that they could opt out of the experiment if they wanted to as well. So if there's somebody we met early on that we don't see at the end, they could legit be like, I don't want to do this anymore. And they're just going to move them to a different unit. So yeah, we don't get all the same characters throughout, but the characters we do learn about, I mean, you've mentioned Randy already a couple times. True story. Is a criminal, yes.
Yeah.
But also true story is a reality TV icon. You know,
I love him so man, much. He's my favorite.
The man knows how to work a confessional. He just does. There are several moments throughout where I'm thinking, oh, this man, he gets it. Like, he understands TV. He knows to find the camera in the room to look at. He knows how to set up his little punchlines for his speeches. I think there was maybe back in one of the first episodes where he was beefing with one of the other inmates, and he's like, "Oh, you don't want to respect the guard? Okay, cool. Well, I got friends other places." And it was just the way he set up that whole little setup. He goes, "Yeah, he thinks he doesn't have to respect me, but that's okay because I got friends." Mm-hmm. And my friends, they got my back. And then next you cut to, you know, his friends going and handling business and establishing a level of respect. That was like, man, and me, Randy as the HOH would just be so fun.
Yeah. Even the way he punctuates so many of his statements with true story. You know, it's really just great for the reality TV of it all. And he's really, I guess him and Tiny ends up being like the two people that we spend the most time with. And especially the journey that we go on with Tiny, where he's really, I think he's the first person we really get to meet in the show. And he's presented as this person that he's always got a knife, that he's been stabbing MFers ever since he was a kid. And, you know, he ends the first episode like, oh, I got to get a knife. Like, and there's just a journey we go on with Tiny where he ends up being like not really at all a problem throughout this whole 8 episodes. Like, I can't think of a time that he was like part of anything that was going wrong. And we really get very invested in this relationship he has with his son. And in the final episode, when his son finally comes to visit him and he apologizes for the mistakes he made, and the son says, like, I forgive you. And you see how happy he is. And then we eventually see him on the outside, like an incredible story for Tiny.
Yeah, we really do book in this with the Tiny story, because we do start off with him being 9 years old and saying the first time I stabbed somebody, I was 9 and they were picking on me because I was little. Mm-hmm. And then by the end of this, he's, you know, met his 14-year-old son again because it's been a long time since they've seen each other. It seems like he makes amends with his baby mama. And then he gets out of jail after finishing the series. And we see him that he's taking care of his son now, living as a free man. He's come so far. And so, yeah, I think the Tiny storyline is definitely the one that they really need to focus on to show us the humanity of somebody who you might look at as a cold-blooded killer or a criminal or something like that. Because we don't know that he killed anybody. But we do know he poked a few people up.
I said that there wasn't ever a time where Tiny was part of the problem. So there actually is a point where he ends up getting into a fight. I think it's in episode 4. And but that fight is sort of set up where, you know, that he can't get through to his son. And, you know, and like, you know, with the reality show, sometimes that they can sort of like tie two things together that may not have been connected. But they make it seem like that it's just out of the sheer frustration that he's trying to get through and calling his son. And then he just is getting busy signals. Son's not picking up the phone. And that's when he ends up snapping. And it's sort of like a setup for like, okay, well, let's try to make it easier for people to be able to be in communication with their family. I think that Tiny is really the face of this idea of like, the more we're giving people the opportunity to connect with the outside world, like the easier it's going to be for us to like remind them like that there is a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, I mean, the same stressors that happen outside of prison are happening inside of prison, right? Like being separated from your family outside of prison when you have access to going to find them. You know, if you're trying to reach somebody, it's very frustrating. The phone's ringing, they're not picking up the phone. You know you want to talk to somebody. You really need to talk to somebody. You're just feeling lonely, or maybe you have something you accomplished. That would stress anybody out. Now tie that to being locked down with a bunch of criminals that also you might feel like your life is, you know, maybe you're not the safest, you know, around these people, but also you've been on 23-1. You only eat enough calories to support living. You know, you don't get an extra food or anything like that. There are all these other things that stress you out and it gives you anxiety and makes you a little bit more just readily, you know, available to just blow up on somebody. And the show is removing those things. It's really trying to knock down those things and saying, okay, why are you acting out? Why are you making, like, why is a person who could just sit in the cell all day and do nothing coming out so angry? What is it about this situation? And so they say, okay, well, too much time in the cell, boom, let's attack that. But once they conquer that part, yeah, let's give them more phone privileges, because the idea that I can now talk to people in unlimited, basically, you know, as much as I want to, when they're available, when the phones are available, then yeah, that could make me less of an angry person. And so, yeah, we saw the alternative when Tiny wasn't getting it. I love that they also pointed out that adding the phones can also increase the stress, because now there are people who never got phone calls who are expecting people to answer the phone. So they never had that expectation. And now they're waking up thinking, today's my day. Today is the day I'm going to get to call somebody and they're going to pick up. And they're not picking up. So now you're taking somebody who didn't even know that they were missing that. Mm-hmm. And now they're giving it to them and then saying, oh, yeah, but you're not loved enough to get those phone calls. Your people don't care enough about you to pick up the phone and have those conversations with you. It really was interesting seeing the sheriff and the team navigate that.
Yeah, the thing about the like having to pay for the phone calls and then people who can't make the phone calls because they don't have the money in their accounts to be able to do that, that to me like really was eye-opening, because I feel like that it's sort of a throwback to a time when, you know, these long distance calls were expensive and, you know, you need a payphone and, you know, we all had phone plans. How many minutes do I have? Like, I think these phone call minutes, I think are like pretty cheap at this point. Like, I can understand why there's tension around how many minutes you can be on the phone, but in terms of like charging people to use the phone in the facility, like that seems very outdated.
Yeah. I mean, it very much is. I remember when I was a wee lad, I had a relative who was in prison and we would get the phone calls collect. And if you're listening to this and you're a person of a certain age, you don't know what I'm talking about. But Everybody above that age, y'all get it. Like, you used to get a phone call and it would say, hey, you have a call from the such and such correctional facility. Would you like to accept the charges?
Yeah.
And
I listened to Serial.
The documentary or whatever, an audiobook. Is there an audiobook? That's what it is. Yep. I've never heard it, but I've heard good things. But I think it like launches true crime podcasts or, you know, whatever. Like it like starts all of that, that journey for everybody else. It creates the Maris and Sarah Carradines of the world. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I remember when I was young, we would get the collect call, but sometimes they would tell you exactly who the call was from. And the inmate, if they didn't have money on their books, what they would just do is just tell you exactly what they wanted. So you would get the call. It was like, you have a collect call from, and it would say something like, hey, it's me. I need more money on my books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
and it didn't say at the such and such correctional facility, would you like to accept the charges? And of course you say no, because I'm not paying for that.
and that wasn't the only jail. Like, I mean, that was like, you know, you didn't have money and you would like collect call your parents and like, pick me up at the bowling alley.
It's Bob. We had a baby. Eats a boy. You know,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like that's like, oh, it's Bob. They had a baby. It's a boy. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of thing is still going on in jails, essentially. So yeah, they made it free for them to make those phone calls, and then we see that again, the inmates are a lot happier because now they can handle business. So, you know, like there is an idea that these inmates are just going to call and harass their families, maybe like, oh, I'm trying to get in touch with my son. I want to talk to my mom. All this other stuff, mm-hmm. But also they need to talk to lawyers. They also need to, you know, they need to prep for what they're going to do when they get out of jail. And a lot of them, you know, if they don't have money to put on their books, they can essentially get released from jail and then just be standing out on the curb with nothing, you know, with nowhere to go, with nobody to pick them up. And so this is something that is benefiting all of them in the long term. And I really was happy that they made that move because I didn't know what was going to come next. Once they established the community, I was thinking, okay, then what happens? Because that was 2.5 episodes in. We'd already figured out the hierarchy here. Randy and his friends were in charge. But what do we do to really elevate this experiment and see if it actually helps people? The phones was that was a great touch.
I'd love to go back to Randy. He's just such an interesting character at the heart of this that he's like... I feel like it's almost like a Shakespearean type figure of that he is like we meet him early on. He's really like our protagonist early on. And he takes on all this and maybe you could say he takes on too much. He gets in too many people's businesses. And we get to see then the reaction to Randy and then how Randy processes the negative feedback that he is getting. And he does not process it well.
No, at first he doesn't even perceive what they're talking about. They say, Randy, listen to me. You are in everybody's business and no one asked you to do that. You need to get out of people's business. And Randy says, you know, everybody keeps saying I'm in their business, but I don't understand. I don't understand what they mean. And so you could see the wheels turning as he's trying to figure out, why do y'all think that just because I'm in charge of everyone and I'm deciding who else is in charge and I am, you know, calling house meetings and I am ensuring that everybody eats and when I'm ready for them to eat and all this other stuff, even though it's within the rules of the jail, you know, like, why does everybody keep saying that I'm in their business? I'm just trying to help. And eventually, after so much pushback, he starts to feel unappreciated. Like, y'all see all the stuff that I'm doing. I don't have to do this. I could just wake up and play checkers all day like everybody else. And drink hooch like Squirrel with walking around with my little coffee mug. You know, like I could do that too. And so I will, if that's what you want. He's like, yeah, if y'all want to be in charge, take it. And he just steps back enough for, you know, to let the natural order take place. And it just goes to chaos. There are things that are happening with the meals situation. We know that Randy is a part of the kitchen team. Yeah. So he's been very, very instrumental in making sure everybody gets their meals. That falls apart first. And then from there, it's just a snowball effect.
Yeah. Episode 4 is called Pod Daddy. That's really like the very Randy centric episode. And, you know, we see Randy, like there's, he has highs and lows. Like he's bringing everybody together. He's making some kind of jail pizza, that, people,
was that was disgusting.
I learned more about the commissary and I had no idea ramen noodles, and the you know, Flamin' Hot Cheetos, like,
that's disgusting.
I had no idea these were such important parts of what was going on in the commissary and, the jail system, that noodles are money. This was, blew my mind.
So the commissary stuff makes sense to me. You know, like, listen, if you have money, that translates to food there and snacks and just, you know, luxury items that you just wouldn't, you wouldn't even think about sometimes when you think about, okay, what do these people have in jail? Like we saw rubber bands even, you know, for people's hair being tied up. Mm-hmm. All that stuff gets snatched away when they get in trouble. But when they're given their freedoms, it's like, yeah, you can have your ramen, you can have your snacks, your Cheetos, all that stuff. You can trade them, you can barter them, they gamble with them. And it's just to find something to do throughout this entire time because they're just sitting in jail doing nothing. And so they're using all of that stuff to entertain themselves, but also, you know, they be hungry. You know, again, they're only getting enough calories to sustain them. They're not getting excess food. They can't just run down to the fridge whenever they want something. So they give them all this stuff. Well, the commissary, you have to pay for it, obviously. And so then everybody else uses it to pay for services and other goods. So that part made so much sense to me, but I'm telling you, I could not watch the pizza.
They get creative and it's like, oh, this looks, I don't know. I'll try it. But
No, I'm with Tiny. Tiny did not try it and I wouldn't try it either. I'm kind of like, I'm following whatever Tiny's doing. If Tiny touches it, I'll try it. But he seemed to be disgusted. And so I took that as fair game for me to also be disgusted.
But, you know, Randy, he's gonna like be the person who comes up with the idea of making the phone list, which ends up like relieving some of the tension around the phone. But we end up seeing Randy get into it with a young guy named Chauncey. And Chauncey, you know, he's in some serious trouble, but he's also a very young guy. He tells us, like, you know, I'm not supposed to be here. I think he says he wants to be a coder. And Chauncey is like, he's in a bad place mentally, also like facing like very serious charges against him. And he's also, you know, a very young guy and is looking at potentially spending a good portion of his life in facilities like this. And him and Randy are getting into it. And we end up seeing where then he's really challenging Randy. He's calling Randy a pig and he gets Randy's goat so bad that Randy basically takes him on and gets into a fight, which we don't really get to see.
Yeah, if you did not watch the show, number one, what are you doing? Go watch the show. But also, you know, if this is too much for you, then of course, I very much understand why you would tap out because it gets kind of graphic. But let me set this up for you. Chauncey is a young guy. His name is actually Chauncey Young, but he's also a young fellow. But he's large. He's bigger physically than Randy is. Randy's older, but you could probably tell, like, he's probably a little bit more fit. So the argument is between, like, this older guy who's probably seen a lot more, who understands the way things work, and Chauncey, somebody who's, like, a little bit more rebellious. And so he's pushing back against Randy, and for good reason, honestly. Randy is in charge, but Randy, no one left you in charge. You don't get to just say, you know, make everybody do whatever you want them to do all the time the way you want them to do it. That said, when he disrespects Randy, Randy snatches him up like Batman, and it is so funny. Like it's hard to watch again because these are real people. But at the same time, Randy goes to Chauncey. They open the cell door and Randy grabs him like a bear hug and just like tosses him into the room. And then we don't see what happens, but they come back and Chauncey has had an attitude adjustment. And Randy's like, oh, I don't know if you think I'm afraid of you or not, but I am not. And I demand respect. And whatever happened in the darkness, Randy made it happen. He very much Bruce Wayne. Like, even the other prisoner was saying, like, hey, did you see that? He just snatched him out in the darkness. I was like, oh, yeah. This is a real Dark Knight Rising right here.
Yeah, and probably the moment where Randy loses his cool the most. Miller got him a little worked up earlier on, but with the whole thing with Chauncey. But it was really kind of a breaking point for Randy, because he's also getting some feedback that, you know, the young people are really pushing back against Randy. He's talking to his roommate, and he's like, "What is this everybody's saying?" And they're like, "Yeah, they call you Pod Daddy." And he reacts very negatively to this. Like, what? That's not true. Like, yeah, don't blame me. I'm just telling you what people are saying.
This is Tyson talking to Coach. It's like, hey, take the feather out of your hair. People are mocking you. They're making fun of you behind your back. They don't like your stories. They think you're lying.
Be humble.
And Randy is like Coach. He's like, what are you talking about? I'm just trying to help. I want iron to sharpen iron here. They're like, Randy, stop it. You don't get to be in charge. And so that's when he finally throws up his hands and said, okay, fine. Y'all got it. Everybody take care of yourselves. See, y'all will come crying back to me soon enough. I know you will. They really don't come crying back to Randy, but there's definitely an opportunity for Randy later on to say, all right, let me step back in. I prove my point. I'll take charge again. And I don't think anybody pushes back again after that.
Yeah, well, this is when Randy says, he ends episode 4, I'm done. And so done. Randy is done. And so there's kind of like this vacuum of leadership coming out of this, which really sets up where things go off the cliff, like in the middle portion of this. We meet a bunch of other people. Crooks, another person, one of my favorites in the show. Crooks is another person, really great on camera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. Crooks, you know, first of all, cool nickname. I mean, if you got to be in jail, Crooks is not the worst nickname you can have.
Yeah.
But yeah, he tells us a lot about his struggle with methamphetamines. Like he's a drug addict. And so he said, I come to jail. And when I get out, I struggle with that part. And so while in jail, I don't want to be involved in any of that nonsense. I don't want to get high. I don't want to do the weed or anything else, because when I get out, I want to make sure that I'm far removed from the idea that I need to go get high. Also, this stuff doesn't do anything for me. Like, I like my meth. And so we really follow Crooks on his journey of saying, at first, he's not really a fan of Randy being in charge either. But when things start to get chaotic and it starts to disturb his, you know, his day to day, that's when Crooks starts to speak up a little bit more. And he really does emerge as one of the focal characters. We see him and his sister at one point during a family visit. And they really talk it out. And it does seem like Crooks is on the route to becoming a better person and to getting the rehab that he so much desired. Because before he went to jail, he was begging people to help him find a rehab out of the state of Arkansas where he could go and get better. And so this was really just watching him kind of explain to us his struggles and seeing where they ultimately lead him to a rehabilitation facility, I believe, at the end of this all.
Yeah, Crooks, that he's a great character throughout the whole thing. He has this big beard and then very suddenly he shaves it. And I was trying to like, who's this guy that's talking? It took me a minute to realize that the Crooks with no beard.
Yeah, and then the word shave is really like another one that we're really... Shave is a strong word here because they don't have any blades. And so we see Crooks is... he's pretty good at what he does. He's got like a chemical thing that he does on people's faces. You know, remember he hooks up Tiny's mustache at some point? So,
you know, I didn't even think of like, okay, they don't have a blade to shave. I thought that was like a shaving cream that he was using. But yeah, that makes sense that it's like some kind of like Nair chemical hair remover.
Uh-huh. So, yeah, so they didn't have any.
How did he get rid of the whole beard?
Listen, I think that they will give them like some razors, but there is no way that he had a razor just walking around. They have those single edge plastic razors. I think that you can like check out in certain prisons. But yeah, we see that he's going to find a way to make himself look nicer. Because again, I think Crooks knew he was going to be meeting with his sister at some point. He was trying, you know, he's working on these phone calls. He's trying to get out of jail so that he can get to rehab and really start his life over. I did read somewhere that in January of this year, he might have found himself arrested again.
Mm-hmm.
The journey of Crooks is a fun one to watch. Also, like you said, great character on television. He really knows how to speak to the confessionals.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive, America's number one motorcycle insurer. Everything is more exhilarating when you're on your motorcycle, just like your bike is more protected when you choose Progressive Motorcycle Insurance. They offer coverage for your bike starting as low as $75 per year, and they keep things affordable with discounts like paid in full, multi-policy, and responsible driver. So raise your kickstands and get to quoting at Progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. $75 premium is for state minimum coverage. Not available in DC. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
I want to talk about when things really get wild after we see Randy step back. So now Randy steps back and okay, so that there's another character, Don Don, that is going to take over handing out the trays, and it doesn't go as well. Somebody misses a meal, and do you see Randy very shaking his head? It's like, that wouldn't have happened if I was giving out the trays. But things really start to get wild. We mentioned the hooch. The hooch operation is really taking off. But then also, we talked about East Side and Ty a little bit last time. But these guys are really, and kudos to East Side for being a great, like he's like the professor on Gilligan's Island. That he's got a lot of like big ideas on how to do things, but a lot of them end up being very mischievous. That he's the guy who's really that they're going to be able to get the fire started. We even see like Survivor that they're going to start fire with a pair of glasses. He's got a lot of ideas of like, hey, we just if we get a flame, very similar to Survivor, don't give them a flint, that they can do a lot of stuff if they get fire.
And they can keep it alive. East Side's story is I think East Side's my favorite story of them all, because we really see East Side start off and kind of like, oh yeah, I've had my struggles with drugs. I tried to steal these reptiles from the pet store.
I forgot the iguana story.
And the iguana and snake arrested me and left me for dead for the cops to come pick me up. But we see Eastside start off almost like a troublemaker, and they come to Eastside, but Eastside has a lot of skills that this whole unit could benefit from as long as Eastside is operating within the bounds of the community. Mm-hmm. Once there is no more regulation, Eastside does what Eastside does best, and that is provide. He's a provider for this group. They need a wick. He's going to figure out how to make it. They want tattoos. He's going to get it to you. He's got the hooch recipe. And so, yeah, Eastside is also very good in confessional. Very good in confessional. Another star, breakout star of this season. But he does. When everything starts getting out of line, Eastside has people taking batteries out of clocks to bring them to make fire.
Could we talk about the clock? Because this was like the most like harrowing and daring moment of the whole show, of that they can get the battery, and there's a clock on the wall. If they get the battery out, that they're going to be able to like get a spark, and then they'll be able to make the fires more easily. And so that they need somebody, then the clock is like 15 feet up on the wall. So they need somebody to go ahead and get the clock down off the wall so they could get out the battery. And there's a woman guard. They call her Miss Dennis, who... Miss Dennis, I think, ends up getting redemption later on, because she comes in later when they shut everything down and they say that she's got like the bloodhound nose and she's able to find all the contraband. But it doesn't look great for Miss Dennis here during the clock incident.
Was she like peeking through the window, kind of like, what y'all doing in there? Yeah. She's not really coming in and getting involved. So every time she does like a little lap past the window, They look and hey, Miss Dennis, we're not doing nothing. And the moment she walked away, they do the heist.
They need like a Taryn type figure, like watching the live feeds and like giving them the update of what's going on. It feels like that not enough paying attention to the live feeds, I felt like.
Well, it's like you've taken all the stuff from them that they could use to hurt themselves. Well, or at least the stuff that you can find, right? Because we saw them do a sweep. So they know for the most part, unless these people just start fighting, there's not a ton of stuff they can get into. Like there's stuff that they can get into for sure, but not a lot, you know? And it's like the levels of that they have to go to get the stuff. It's like, yeah, you could be watching closely, but also you could take your foot off the gas a little bit, because this man, CJ, ends up climbing a wall, essentially, to snatch a clock down so they could take the battery out. So Eastside could then connect the, you know, the positive and negative side of the battery to create the fire in his little room so that they can create a candle so that they'd have the, you know, so they could light mm-hmm. everything that they needed. And it was harrowing because Ms. Dennis is just, she's like kind of peeking in, and they barely get it done. They even get the clock back they on put the back. Wall without her noticing. Yeah. So, listen, these are criminals. This is what they do. And so
they're very crafty. Yeah.
They're very crafty, and they have nothing but time, Rob. That's another thing. These people are in jail, and all they have to think about is what's in front of them and what's outside of jail. So it's not like they have a lot of tasks to do every day. So while you're sitting there, your brain is probably working on, okay, what mm-hmm. could I do with the items in front of me? They're a regular Survivor MacGyver.
Yeah. And so that they get the light, and then it ends up being where they're smoking, they've got a bunch of things lit, whether it's the coffee sticks. There's also contraband that came in. And so it's a real party at one point. There's so much smoke and smoking that's going on that they set off the smoke detectors. And then that's basically the end of the party.
Yeah, because once the smoke detector goes off, it's something that I think people in jail just never want to hear is an alarm. Mm-hmm. The alarm goes off and this is like, oh no, not this. And one cop comes in, he kind of examines the smoke detector and he's like, oh, somebody call the sheriff because if there's smoke, there's fire and there should not be fire here. So let's do another sweep. We see the room stripped. We see the inmates stripped, cavity searches, all that stuff. They completely wipe out everything, all the illegal activity that was going on under their noses. They shut it down instantly. And now the sheriff is sitting there faced with, is this a mistake? Was this a problem? Like, why did I give y'all all this freedom if y'all were going to do this stuff? Should we even like continue this experiment? We might shut it down because y'all don't know how to act.
Yeah. And so they end up after this, they put the whole thing on pause, and you know, we've reached this point. This is episode 6 at this point, and they don't know what to do. They say, okay, let's put everybody just back in 23-1 and just have like a total reset. And what they end up deciding is, okay, we need to have a vote. I was like, a vote, you say?
A vote, you say?
Yes. Hmm. Who's the troublemaker? And I was actually struggling to follow the rules of what the vote was going to be because I wasn't sure. At one point, I thought they said anybody who gets multiple votes is going to be
out. That's what he
said. Or mm-hmm. was there going to be one person who was going to be out? But they come up with this idea, and I didn't know this was a thing. I guess this is also a part of the experiment where we're going to vote somebody. And they repeatedly talked about, we're going to vote somebody off the island. They said, this is definitely not Big Brother. Of course not, because there was no HOH. There would be two people right on the block if this was a Big Brother.
Right. And then how is this Big Brother if there's an island? Come on, y'all. I know y'all are in jail, but keep up with current events. That's not how the Big Brother works.
Yeah. So yeah, they're going to get ready to have a big vote.
Yeah, and this is interesting because I too receive that as if you get multiple votes, you're out. You know, and so the goal, like the people have the opportunity to not vote for anybody. They can NA. We saw a few people like Crook say,
"Is that if you play your shot in the dark?"
Yeah, or like you bank your vote or something like that. You know, it's just, you're just not going to be voting for anybody this round. That's ideal for a lot of these people. But a lot of them will struggle with this because is it the time to rat out Eastside? Because they know Eastside was kind of the ringleader of the chaos when it came to the contraband, the wig, the coffee sticks, all that stuff can be traced back to Eastside. Or do you, you know, because if you do that, you could become a snitch and you don't want to do that in jail,
right?
You know, and so he's like, all right, well, we could do that, or we could abstain, or a third option. How about we vote out True Story? We don't like him, right? He's been telling us what to do. He can go.
I was saying to myself, Randy, play your idol tonight.
Yeah.
You're going to need it. All the young people, they're talking about you. Like the old people were like, look, we're not saying any names. We're not doing anything. And they're like Mayhem and Chauncey and all the young people are like, yeah. True Story. You're going home tonight.
Which is crazy. It's not crazy like in a like
Parkinson,
absurd way.
Who's also good. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like the goal here is to vote out the bad apple. But you can actually vote out whoever you want to vote out. You know, it's it's like, do I keep the tribe strong or do I do something that's better for me?
Yeah.
And getting rid of True Story is better for a lot of people because they're just sick of hearing him talk. But getting rid of Eastside would be getting rid of the problem, and so there was a decision
Chappelle,
to be made.
Did production save True Story?
Yes. What are you talking about? Of course they did. Of course they did. Because if they really had to follow this rule, I'm going to tell you right now, Eastside got some votes.
This is like a Stephanie is going to get voted out and like, okay, we need Janu to quit.
We need Janu. Janu, hey, what if you went home today?
Janu, what if you just take responsibility for everything? You can stay, but...
Right. Yeah, that's exactly how it is. Cause I'm not gonna lie to you, Eastside got some votes. Yeah. But if I had to wager, I'd say True Story probably got the majority of the House votes here and he would have been going home, you know? And so the sheriff comes in and he's surprised to find out that one of the inmates wants to take the fall for this. Eastside. Eastside says, I know it was me. Yeah. I don't want people trying to rat me out. I know that I'm probably going to go down anyway. I might as well just say it was me. Mm-hmm. Save everybody else the luxury of being a part of this experiment. And then I'll just take my lick the way I, the things I've earned. And so they're very happy with this. The sheriff does punish Eastside. Yeah. He ends up taking away his commissary, his phone privileges and stuff like that for a week, I think.
Yeah.
But he doesn't kick him out. Nobody's expelled from the experiment. Nobody gets voted out. We had to, switch to a different format for next week's vote.
Was this like Eastside went to tribal council and said, no, the only person going home tonight is me. And everybody's like, what? Yep. No, Eastside, no. Like, yeah, right. I got to take responsibility. This was my fault. Put my name down.
We come here on nothing but Netflix. We're like, but Eastside, what's that strategy? You know, what was Eastside trying to accomplish by saying
he just felt
it
bad.
Was me, vote me
he
out.
He just felt bad that he was responsible for so much stuff. But then he throws Ty under the bus.
Well, and he's trying to be Ty's mentor too, right? So he wants Ty to see that, hey, I'm a cool guy. We get along. We're good friends. But also, Don't emulate the bad things that I do in here. You know, Eastside has been doing the prison thing for a while. He's been in and out a bunch of times, and Ty is facing a long sentence. And so he's like, "Hey, I know that we're good friends and that you think I'm cool, but some of the things I do aren't the greatest." And so I thought it was very commendable what Eastside was doing.
Yeah. So he comes off like a redemption arc for Eastside by the end of the show, because he really does. You know, he talks about how he also is dealing with anxiety and depression and how like being the lockdown really is not conducive to his mental health. We also get mental health storyline also with AJ and Don Don, who we find out about their friendship. And AJ is at one point like really not doing well. We hear that he's having suicidal thoughts, and he ends up, which I thought this was like really eye opening, that they end up taking AJ out. And when this is again a man who is in jail serving a jail sentence for a murder, but he is having these like self-harming thoughts, and he ends up getting taken out of the unit, and then he gets put into the hole, which is again, I don't know what is typically done, but that almost is like if somebody is talking about like, they're in this very bad, mental state, to take them and throw them into a solitary confinement situation sounds like, not the best place to put somebody who is going through something like that.
Yeah. So when you're in the hole, you're basically back to a 23-in-1 situation, right? Mm-hmm. You're in solitary confinement. They're taking away anything you can use to hurt yourself. And they're going to now monitor you to make sure that you don't do that. But you're right. This seems like it's almost counterintuitive. This person, we've been taking down all these barriers to make people feel better so that they're not acting out. But also, we can't allow this person to be a part of the general population and surrounded by things that they can use to hurt themselves if, you know, if they're having these thoughts. So what they do is they remove them from all those things that we've been seeing that are making all these people happy, and which would in turn make this person less happy. So AJ is not excited to go to mm-hmm. the hole, but he's like, they asked me if I wanted to hurt myself and I said yes. So here we are. So they end up putting him in solitary confinement to watch him. And everybody's very sad to see AJ go, because I think once they start to form community, the bonds were starting to form too. We know Don Don's very sad. They even have a going away dinner for AJ because they know he doesn't want to go. You know, this is a very comfortable situation for a bunch of people who were in the 23-1. Nobody wants to leave this right now, it seems. And so they feel really bad for him. But I was happy they were able to, you know, to address his mental health issue. I just don't know if sticking him in a hole is the best thing you can do.
Yeah. So we are going to get from the sheriff. Okay, we're going to try to bring in. Okay, so we think we're back on the right track here. But how are we going to do if we bring other people in? And so we get some like a new cast that comes in, and some new inmates are coming in, and they're excited to be here. And for them, they didn't go through the whole journey that we've been through so far. And we meet another older gentleman. His name is Weekly, and Weekly is going to come in, and that he is going to be a little bit of an agitator.
Yeah, he doesn't want to. Well, it's not that he doesn't want to follow the rules. Like you said, he wasn't there when they were established. Mm-hmm. So he showed up probably, you know, having dealt with other prison situations in the past. He's an OG, like in the gang, like or at least gang affiliated. So he's got some clout to him. But when he comes in, he's operating outside the lines of what, you know, the established hierarchy here in this community. And it's rubbing people the wrong way. He's also a cheater. He is cheating at Domino's. And CJ, the guy who climbed the wall and got our battery earlier in the season, he's not happy. And he's like, hey, you've been cheating and we're gambling. So essentially you're stealing from us. And so that's a problem and it needs to be handled. And so, yeah, this peaceful community is now disrupted by somebody who didn't want to play ball. And it starts off as a fight, but eventually CJ and his crew, they jump Weekly, and it's bad. Like they beat the brakes off of him 3-1. And the sheriff has to step in again and say, okay, what are we even doing here? Why are we still having these issues? Do y'all even want to, y'all want to finish this? Y'all want to see this through, or should I just shut everything down?
But Weekly, to his credit, he gets jumped and they come in and he's like, I fell off the bed. I fell off the bunk. Like, boy, they got to put guardrails on these bunks. So many people keep falling off.
Yeah. He says, I fell off the bed. They said, oh, okay. Can you breathe? He says, no. Are you harmed? I am harmed. And it was just the bed. Yes, absolutely. Okay.
The bed can't keep getting away with this, Chappelle.
These beds. Well, you know, the bed in solitary is just like a concrete slab. It's like, here you go. So yeah, the bed strikes again. Weekly is taken down by the bed and three strangers who might have used that bed against him. And it doesn't go well. CJ is basically going to have to get removed after this one, because it was very clear that CJ, Roscoe, and another guy, They obviously have lost sight of things. Mm-hmm. We had a good structure going, and there could have been other ways to address this misconduct. But in prison, this is the fallback. And so they handled it the way they knew how, and it was against the rules. And now, again, they're in jeopardy of getting all of this and all their hard work shut down.
And we're near the finish line. And so right there. The sheriff is going to, you know, come back into this, Sheriff Higgins. And he's like, guys, like, what the hell? Like, is this not working? Is this like, what do we do here? And there's a lot of talk about, okay, what have we learned from this, and how do we like change this moving forward?
Yeah, he tells them, tell me what y'all have taken from this, because if y'all haven't figured out anything, then I don't know what to tell you. Like, we're about to be done, and we're about to go back to the way things were going if this isn't a success. So the prisoners kind of get together and they say, okay, maybe the mentoring situation is what we really should lean into. You know, there should not be anybody in charge, but there should be several mentors throughout who help kind of maintain a certain structure or help indoctrinate people into the system that they have going on here in the H unit. To the point where they even have to establish it. These are not pod daddies. These are not tank daddies. This is literally just, these are the people who were just looking out for the people who come in after them. And there is no, you know, like this, these people are not in charge, but they are going to take the responsibility of making sure that everybody is abreast of all their expectations and that they're keeping on track with the mission so that they're not going to waste this opportunity and that they can ultimately, you know, maybe have more freedoms in the future.
Yeah, when they're having the big meeting with Sheriff Higgins, that somebody ends up saying like, yeah, and then we can have like a pod boss that makes sure, and he's like, no. And
see, then you messed up.
Yeah, and then some. I think it's was it Crooks that says like, well, not pod boss, more like a mentor. Okay, yeah.
Tiny says, yeah. When we say pod boss is a strong word, I was thinking more along the lines mentor. Of like. Mentorship, and then the sheriff said, okay, I hear
okay.
you.
See,
I was like, oh yeah, now you're speaking my language. He's like, who said that? Who said pod boss? No one said pod boss. We just need to establish a few people that we could turn to when stuff like this happens. Because you know, one of the reasons why the leadership wasn't working inside the jail with these inmates is that the leaders were breaking rules as well. Squirrel was a part of the task force, but Squirrel was walking around with a cup of hooch at all times. You know, they even address it with Squirrel. Like, hey, how come we have to follow rules? And Squirrel gets to just yell at everybody while getting drunk every day. And Squirrel's like, I ain't losing my hooch, so I don't know what you're going to do. You pass.
It's like, oh, for my Squirrel, birthday, okay?
He's like, this is my birthday hooch. Leave me alone. I said, no, he makes a good point. It is his birthday. Mayhem wasn't having it.
We're not really talking about that.
We haven't talked a lot about Mayhem, but Mayhem was definitely not having it. He's like, I'm one of the younger guys, and y'all not just going to be able to just be above the law and then expect the rest of us to follow all of the rules. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, mentorship, probably the best way. Because if nothing else, the people who've earned their respect, they tend to get it throughout the series.
And even Mayhem, who is complaining about the old guard through most of the show, does come around and say, like, hey, we do, you know, look up to the older generation. And so there is a nice moment there. But Sheriff Higgins has to basically sleep on it. And we see he comes back and he says, okay, we're gonna leave the doors unlocked. And basically declares that the experiment was a success.
Yeah, Mayhem is another confessional star. I think that we haven't given him enough justice, but the people they chose to really drive the story, they light up and they give you exactly what you need. Because Mayhem has been saying from the beginning, yeah, we're younger, but also that doesn't mean that you're in charge of us.
Yeah.
We have our own ideas of how things could go, and we would like it if we kind of got to govern ourselves as the younger group. And so, yes, a mentorship situation where Mayhem is kind of like the figurehead of that group, but he looks up to somebody like Randy could really be beneficial for them. And so the sheriff does mull it over, and he lands on, all right, cool. Y'all seem to have gotten it. Let's keep the party going. Let's try to keep these same type of regulations. And then maybe we can even spread this to other units.
Yeah, you do bring up an interesting point about the people that got to do the confessionals. And I don't know if it was sort of like, you know, and this was something that we talked about, like with Squid Game, the challenge of, you know, they have 456 people. Mm-hmm. Like, how many people were they actually doing interviews with? Like, did the production come through and like do like just, you know, talk to everybody and like, okay, these are our stars. We're really going to like be following these 8 or 9 people, or are they interviewing everybody in the unit? And these are the people that just gave them the best stuff.
Yeah. To me, it felt like I feel like they did the like preliminary interviews and they got a good feel for who their confessional stars would be. You know, I think that, you know, they talk to all these people, they sit them down. And I think very quickly, people like Eastside, True Story, even Tiny, they jump off the screen. I think that there are some people that we don't get in the beginning that evolve into, you know, maybe bigger characters like a Willie Lovelace or like Don, who we see. But people like Mayhem, True Story, Tiny, Eastside, Crooks, maybe not Crooks, but the other four for sure, they probably jumped off the screen immediately. And then people like Crooks start to warm up as the camera, you know, as they got more into it. Because I have to imagine that you're in prison. So you have to think that you're not going to immediately think, I can speak freely and none of this be used against me, right? Like, right. I'm not going to get in here and rat on myself and give all the tricks of the trade to, like, people on Netflix, because what if they run this back to the sheriff or to the judge?
Or and now I've got a hearing.
Exactly. I mean, I gotta like revamp how I'm approaching court now, because I didn't got on Netflix and said, oh yeah, I make hooch. I still miss doing drugs. Mm-hmm. I made the wick. You know, that can look really contraband. Bad.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Like, you don't want to incriminate yourself any more than you already have being in this situation. So I think for a second, it takes a minute for people to warm up to the cameras. But once they do, and they start realizing that there's a lot of stuff that they can say that I assume will not be used against them in the court of law, they do really start to pop on screen. So I think it was just maybe like trial and error and a little bit of luck that got us the characters that we got.
Yeah. We mentioned the very dramatic scene where Tiny's son finally comes to visit him at the end of the show, where, and then we get to see that moment he has with his son, which really ties his whole story and really bookends the series so well. We then get updates on most of the people that were in the show. Any surprising updates for you?
Yeah, I mean, seeing that Crooks was basically out of jail at that point was like, oh, that's pretty cool. You know, again, I think I read somewhere out. Yeah, Crooks, Tiny as well. You know, Tiny being somebody who we know has stabbed a bunch of people, for him to be wandering the streets again. I was like, oh, were we ready for this already? That was okay. I wasn't expecting such a rapid update on this one. But yeah, Eastside gets transferred to a prison to where he finishes his 3-year sentence. From what I understand, that means he's still in prison. They say he's still doing a little mischievous things, you know, tattoo here and there. But for the most part, he's on the straight and narrow. Ty got 20 years. I said, dang, you know, like, you're rooting for these characters in a way.
Eastside said he was a bad influence on him.
And 20 years is a tough one. Yeah. But yeah, Don got bailed out. Yeah, you know, he's basically begging his family for it.
Right. Like that it was like a $1,000 bond that he needed to get out of there. And really just like kind of like a heartbreaking scene where he tells us that, like, okay, well, he needs $1,000. He calls his sister. And she says, well, my car needs tires.
Yeah. It's like, I got stuff to do.
Wait, so you could get me out of here and you could put tires on your car? And she talks about how that he let her down too many times.
Yeah. And I think that's probably a tale as old as time, you know, where people, you know, will leave prison and end up back in prison. You know, we talked about recidivism last time, but like, yeah, like recidivism, where these people are leaving jail and then coming right back because it's hard to get indoctrinated. It's hard to find a job. It's hard to find housing. There are some apartment complexes that will turn you down if you're a felon. So where do you live? And then there's a job that won't hire you because you're a felon. So where do you go to make money? How do you eat? You know, there are people who won't give you the time of day because you have a criminal background. So how do you, you know, find community again? These people struggle, and so they end up back in jail. And it's clear that this has happened with Don, you know, that like something he's left jail before, he's come home, and then when he did, he didn't establish a relationship with his family to where they would want to go out of their way, spend a lot of money on getting him out. His sister at one point even says, last time you got out, you didn't even stop by and say hi. And I'm with the sister. I'm sorry, you want me to spend $1,000 for you to get out of jail and not even come over here and be appreciative, not to spend time with us, not to, you know, be a part of the family. You just want to get out of jail. And for Don, he's like, yes, absolutely, because why would you want me subjected to this? And she's like, why should I care if you're not even going to care enough to stop by and say hello every now and then? So, yeah, it was a hard moment for Don. He was going through. So I'm happy that he ultimately did get bailed out. I'm happy for him that he got bailed out. Now, hopefully he does what he needs to do to stay out at that point.
Yeah. So it sounds like that the doors have remained unlocked. They're trying to do this type of experiment on more units here in the facility. I don't know necessarily like what the update has been since this has aired.
Yeah, I've been looking for a lot of stuff, and most of the stuff was just, you know, news reports about how the Pulaski County judge was putting like $60,000 check toward the production company behind Unlocked, because I guess they Like there were some questions about whether or not this should be done, whether or not they had permission to do it, how much money was made from this, who's getting the money. I heard some of the inmates were paid on certain websites. They were saying stuff like that. We don't really get an update about how the experiment has been going, because I think there's been a lot of controversy behind this actual experiment happening and it being aired on Netflix.
All good questions to ask, you know. I think that, you know, it's not really explored in the series. Like, was this an idea that Sheriff Higgins had for a while and then got the production company involved because I want to like show the world this experiment? Like, is this an experiment that could have been done without the cameras? Was this an idea that a production company had that ended up looking for a prison facility to run this type of experiment and had to talk law enforcement into like, hey, we want to come into your jail and do this. Like, I really don't know in terms of like the chicken or the egg, which came first.
Yeah. And then there was also, you know, the question of should these people even be in a situation where they could be a part of this experiment? Because some of these people were not convicted yet. They were awaiting trial, awaiting sentencing. You know, these people, some of them were just in there. So it's like, oh, yeah. So if you tell me I have to sit in here for 23 hours and, you know, and then I get 1 hour out for a couple of days until I get my trial, that's one thing. But to then say, okay, now I'm going to open the doors and you're going to get to hang out with the people who are in there for capital murder. You know, you start to question, okay, did I have any agency in this? Am I safe? You know, because I haven't even had my trial. I could be innocent for all we know. But here I am in this experiment. And is it even ethical to put me in this situation? Yeah. Right. So there were a lot of questions being asked. I don't know if we're ever going to get a real update about the changes that have been made due to this, because again, I think that Netflix is going to do.
Crooks for a deep dive.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, Crooks.
See if you can get Tiny.
Well, Crooks is out of jail for a while, but I think Crooks is back in jail. Okay. You know,
all right.
So I think we can get Tiny.
Tiny,
on the phone.
Maybe Dom Dom.
Yeah, Dom
Dom. What was the update on Randy? Did we get an update on Randy?
Yeah, Randy's still in jail.
Okay.
You know, that's
well, if he has unlimited calling, you know, maybe we can, you know, still get a hold of him.
Now, that would be something interesting. I wonder if anybody at this point does reach out to the inmates to get stories, because you can, I mean,
true stories.
I think that there's probably the journalism that's out there that says, okay, well, we saw this story told by Netflix, but how else can we tell these stories? Are people clamoring for the follow-up? Do we want to know more about these people's lives? Is there a book deal in here for somebody? The sky could be the limit here. It's just a matter of how far is the prison system willing to let this go? You know, letting Netflix cameras come in and do a documentary, that's pretty far. So, you know, maybe get Mike Bloom and Parade on it. You could see Mike Bloom going to talk to Tiny, right?
For sure. Go on location. All right, but either way, this was very interesting to watch, very thought-provoking. I really enjoyed getting to talk about this series with you over these last couple of weeks. So I hope that the listeners enjoyed coming on this ride with us.
Yeah, I saw a few comments about it on the Twitter account for Nothing But Netflix. It followed Nothing But Netflix on Twitter at Nothing But RHAP, because a lot of people were saying, oh, no, we really enjoyed you talking about this and we'd love to hear what you think about the rest of it. Hell, Matt Lagori even texted me like, should I watch the rest of this? Absolutely. It's a great show. And so, yeah, if you have any feedback or what you thought about it, please let us know. Tweet at Nothing But RHAP and tell us what you thought about Unlocked, a jail experiment, because we had obviously had a lot of thoughts, and hopefully, you know, it was up to everybody's, you know, standards in like talking about this very sensitive subject, but also kind of keeping it fun.
Yeah. Next time, Chappelle, we're going to get back together in a week to talk about something that has been on my radar for a little bit. Jerry Seinfeld, my hero. He is on Netflix. He's made a movie that's about Pop-Tarts. It's called Unfrosted. I really have no idea what to expect. It drops on Netflix on Friday, May 3rd. So I wanted to get back together and talk about that. So that's what we're going to cover next time on Nothing But Netflix. But something else that's on my radar coming to Netflix. Uh-oh. Have you seen this? That there is the Netflix roast of Tom Brady?
Yeah, because I thought it was on already. So I get on Netflix, and I bought a new television recently, Rob. So wow. I'm very excited to always watch things on TV. And so I have this huge picture of Tom Brady pops up on the screen. Mm-hmm. And it's like the roast of Tom Brady. So immediately I'm like, yes, actually, click, 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 enhance, 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 because yeah. I'm ready to watch it. I'm like, okay, who's going to be on the dais? What are they going to say? What's Tom going to say? And then I see that it's actually not available on Netflix yet. It's a live event on May 5th.
Sunday, May 5th at 8 p.m. Eastern. So that it's been probably very few times that Netflix has done something live. They are doing more and more live. They had live tennis, and they did, we talked about Chris Rock live on Netflix. They tried to do one of the Love is Blind finales live, and that was kind of a disaster. But they're going to go live with Kevin Hart and the greatest roast of all time on Netflix. So I don't know. It could be maybe something else that we may want to cover at some point.
Yes, I would love to talk about that, because we've done a little bit of comedy yeah. on here, but we've never really just gotten into roast territory. And I, Rob, I'd have to guess that you are a person who've seen a lot of the celebrity roasts yes. in the past.
Yes.
Yeah. yeah. That's kind of we both have that same similar DNA of what I've seen a lot of Comedy Central. So, you know, I've seen all the roasts, all the greats do it, all the greats get roasted. And so I'm very excited to see the greatest roast of all time yeah. here for a football player that I do not.
Yes.
Love.
Would love to see Tom Brady get roasted at any occasion. Yes, absolutely. So. Would love to hear, you know, some feedback on, you know, what we could potentially do with that. All right, Chappelle, what's coming up for you?
You can catch me here on RHAP talking about all the stuff that you always ask me to talk about, you know, so Below Deck every week with Sasha. We got some good Below Deck news coming up. Below Deck Med will be coming our way for the Bravo fans out there very soon. So tune into our Below Deck coverage.
Was Trishelle on Below Deck?
Yeah, Trishelle from The Real World and from this most recent season of The Traitors was a charter member on this new upcoming season of Below Deck Mediterranean. And so if you are a fan of Below Deck, or if you know Trishelle, or maybe you're just a fan of Sasha and I, tune into our Below Deck recaps on the Bravo TV Wrap-Ups feed on RHAP. You can also catch me talking about Deal or No Deal Island with Rob and Jenny, and doing exit interviews for the eliminated contestants of Deal or No Deal Island every week as well. And then you can check me out on recapkickback.com talking about whatever I want to talk about with all the folks that I want to talk about it with. And most recently, Mari, LaTanya, and I reunited to talk about the movie The American Society of Magical Negroes, a movie that a lot of people didn't see because it was controversial and it was snatched from theaters. But we watched it, so you didn't have to. And you can check out that recap on our YouTube page, youtube.com/@recapkickback, to see that and all the rest of the content I have over there. But that's about all, Rob.
All right. Well, great job, Chappelle, with all of this here, talking about Unlocked over these last 2 weeks. We'd love to hear your feedback, especially if you enjoyed hearing stuff like this. Find us on Twitter. And of course, you can leave us a rating and review on the Nothing But Netflix podcast feed. Go to robiswebsite.com/Netflix feed. Thank you so much for joining us. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.